Yeah.
In 1964, during my fifth term in the legislature, I decided to retire. And the reason I wanted to retire was because I wasn't receiving what I consider my due rewards from the Republican Party. I figured I should have been a floor leader. I carried on all their fights for them. I was very vigorous. So I decided to retire. And then when Scranton called me in for connection with certain things, he had wanted to appoint me a judge, but the pressure was on him, and he appointed somebody else, and he said, "Morris, I want to do something for you. What do you want?" Well, I said, "Name me on a member of the Unemployment Compensation Board," because my brother was connected with it. He told me it was very interesting work. So I had an interim appointment, a workman's compensation referee, and for 4 or 5 years I was a member of the board in Harrisburg, which heard cases relating to unemployment compensation claims. It was very interesting work, but in the last month when Governor Schaefer was the Republican governor, and before Shep became governor, I retired voluntarily, even though I had about a year to remain on my term. Incidentally, this may be pertinent to the Bork nomination. We had many cases in the unemployment compensation where I thought morally the decision was wrong. But I wrote in my opinions that I do not legislate. Your recourse is to the legislature. And I think some of the judges today are legislating. For example, since time immemorial, churches and non-profit organizations were immune from negligence actions. When they fell in front of a church, he couldn't be sued. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania decided that that they should be sued. The result was wrong, but the result was right, but the method was wrong. They should have gone to the legislature to do that. They had no right to overturn the common law, which was part of the law of the state for almost since William Penn became came here. And that's I think it's all right to be very mellowed, all right to be very considerate, but we should live in a government of laws and not of men. And judges have no right to intervene in the internal affairs of school districts, internal affairs of other things. That's for the legislature to decide. They're to interpret law, not to make law.
How do you feel about the constitution changes, you know, that they're talking about?
Which constitution changes, for example?
They were talking about something that would change the Bill of Rights in some way.
I know of no thing being, I know none. I disagree with Mr. Tribe of Harvard Law School on the reservation of rights. The reservation of rights was rights to reserve the rights to the states. I think that the United States Supreme Court had no right to intervene in the decisions of the states as provided for by their constitutions. For example, when the founding fathers found the Constitution, they reached a compromise that there should be at least two senators in each district, in each state, regardless of size, so that the one particular group of people couldn't overwhelm the determination legislation. This was a very good compromise. Our Pennsylvania Constitution provided that every county, regardless of size, could have one member of the House of Representatives. The purpose of that was so that the city of Philadelphia would not be able to overwhelm it with having, and Pittsburgh, overwhelming because of their population. The Supreme Court, decided to change that because of this one man, one vote decision. I don't think they had a right to do that. Pennsylvania has a right to make its own constitution. It had a right, those fellows meeting back in 1838, 1870, where they had to provide that that each county should have a representative. That was in order to balance legislation between the rural and the city districts. And the history of legislation in Allegheny County, since they abolished the benefits for the rural districts, has not been very high, outstanding, in my opinion. It's very easy to be on the sidelines and criticize, but I'll give them that free ride.
Can you think of any other laws or any other issues that came up while you were in legislature?
Well, of course, I opposed the increase of expense account during the middle of the term, for which I was hissed by both sides. And when I was hissed, I got up and said, "Gentlemen, I just got reelected." I said, "The people of Allegheny County remember who was against changing the horses in the middle of the stream." I can't, there's a clipping over there, I might be remembering some things, to pull it out there and talk. Mm-hmm. In this clipping, when I was interviewed by Mr. Yule of the press, I defined myself as a hybrid politician. Hybrid journalist who became a politician, and now I'm watching the crowd go by. So I have a deep interest in the affairs of this country, and I discussed it with some of my maverick friends like Dr. Levant, and we agree on a lot of things. I think that the country is in terrible shape. I don't think we have any leaders on either side. They're all expedient. They all want to get elected. I was a believer in Mr. Reagan, but I think he's lost his spine. You should stand up for the principles what you're standing for, and he's become rather soft soap. He should stand by his principles, that's all. If he thinks the bill is no good, do like Harry Truman did, vote, veto it. Let them override his veto. On a national standpoint, I think that the Democratic Party is absolutely wrong in not being bipartisan on foreign policy. I think the President of the United States should decide foreign policy. Congressmen are not qualified to decide foreign policy. You can't trust them. I remember during World War I, I was at a home in the of a man who was German, and there was a congressman there whose name is not material, and he began to tell us about secrets in Congress. Now, you can't trust 232 congressmen to run things. If you don't like the foreign policy as outlined by a president, Democrat or Republican, then throw out the president. I'm glad to say that when Roosevelt had his problem during World War I, he selected two Republicans to be in his cabinet because the Republican Party gave him bipartisan support. And I think the Democrats ought to give Mr. Reagan bipartisan support, even to the extent of hurting themselves politically. I think they've hurt themselves, and I see nobody on the horizon who can save this country. Nobody. I thought for a time that Sam Nunn has something on the ball, but he has become political too. I think we're in for a depression in 1989, 1990, and the man who's the next president, whether it's Republican or Democrat, is going to have one hell of a time. Incidentally, the New Deal was not originated by Mr. Roosevelt, you know. The New Deal was originated by Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was a liberal, you know. The Democratic Party, when before Mr. Roosevelt became president, it was a conservative party consisting of the machine politicians of the North and the Ku Klux Klan element of the South. There was not a holy alliance between them. And two men who were the big men in that party were the financiers, Belmont, who was a Jew and then turned Episcopalian, and Mr. Thomas Fortune Ryan, a big copper king. Until he became president, Franklin FDR was not an outstanding liberal, in my opinion. The outstanding liberal in the Democratic Party lost Al Smith because of his religion. But FDR was an astute politician, and he realized the times had changed, and he changed with the times. And he put into enacted into law many things, some of which didn't originate with him, like the Reconstruction Finance Corporation to help industry. That was proposed by Herbert Hoover, but the Democrats refused to pass the bill in order not to give him the credit. Then they passed it under FDR's administration, which is happening today. They're following out the same policy of tying him up completely, and then they're going to pass some of the legislation that he wants because they find out it's sound. Now, the social service legislation which Mr. Roosevelt passed had been enacted into law in Europe, in Germany. Workmen's compensation, social security, and health benefit, they all originated in Germany after the socialist revolution of 1848, when Bismarck, in order to placate the socialists, passed this type of legislation. It's good legislation. The Republicans should have wakened up. I mean, they didn't keep up with the times. They were too much of a closed-off corporation with too many a few big shots running the party, and that was no good for the party, and that's the reason it died. Now, the Democratic Party may become in the hands of the labor unions, and then they'll die if they do that too, because the people will not stand for it. I recall very well one time the labor opposed my nomination to the Unemployment Compensation Bureau because I had voted for reform of the law. So I went to a high official in the AFL-CIO of Pennsylvania, and I knew him well. He was a good friend of mine. And I said to him, you know, if I get on the board, I'm going to decide cases on the merits. He says, Morris, I know you are. I said, then why can't you be for me? He said, we don't want that kind of a man. We want to own you. That's the same. Now, that was the same way with the, I remember one week I was on the board and I decided a case against management. I heard the man down in the bar in Harrisburg raising hell with me because I was anti-management. The next week I decided a case against labor. I was anti-labor. I thought in my own way I was doing the right thing, that was all. So you can't get anywhere politically today being a middle road man. And I thought I was a middle road man. I don't compare myself with one of the great politicians of this country, over the years. Henry Clay was the great compromiser. He was one of the outstanding men of this nation. Because he was a compromiser, he was a never-elected president. He was far superior to these people who became president between the days of Monroe and Lincoln. So I'm watching the crowd go by, and in many respects I'm glad I never became a judge. I might have been stultified, that's all.
Did you want to go back a little bit to when you were in, to when you met your wife? We never did cover your family.
Well, I met my wife when right after I graduated, I became active in the YMWHA on Belleville Avenue. And I was a member of the board there for many years and secretary there for many years. And my wife's sister was the executive secretary secretary to the executive director, and I met her. And when I married her, everybody was surprised. They thought I was going to marry her sister. And that's how I happened to meet her. The YMHA then, during the Depression years, was a haven for young people meeting there, and that's how I met my wife. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter who's a graduate of MIT. She's an electrical engineer, and she's working for Data General. She's ultra-Orthodox, and she has three children, two boys and a girl. Her husband is a mechanical engineer, has his own business, and they live up near Boston, Newton Center.
So, what is her name?
Ruth Fax. Ruth F-A-X. Her father-in-law is Mr. David Fax, who's active in the Young People's Synagogue and who was formerly a scientist with the Westinghouse Corporation. All the children are Orthodox. They do not answer the telephone on Fridays. But the Boston community is a much larger Jewish community than Pittsburgh, probably six times as many. And the scientists up there and the professors and teachers on the whole are more religious than around here. And you notice Young People's Synagogue here consists of a lot of scientists from the Eastern Seaboard, and they're Orthodox.
Do you see a connection?
What's that?
Oh, is there a connection?
Between what?
Between
being a scientist?
Being a scientist and being Orthodox, huh?
Well, I couldn't figure that
out.
I'd have to surmise and guess. I wouldn't really think that they were raised in a Orthodox climate, and they like it, and they continue it. Like somebody says, being a Reformed Jew is like taking a bath with your socks on. Reformed Jewry has its place, but I think when the chips are down, the Orthodox Jewry, not to the nth degree somebody has, is sounder than Reformed Jewry, in which a lot of people disagree with me. But I think I should stick to the political field and not get into the religious field. I'll leave that to other people like Falwell and.
Can you tell us about the why?
I'm very much disappointed in the YMHA transferring its main places to Squirrel Hill. I recall very vividly and with a clearness that stands out in my mind that when Edgar Kaufman and Mr. Klee and Mr. Frank and the other millionaire supporters of the Y, who gave the money for its construction in Belleville Avenue, they were well aware then that the population would migrate to other areas. With malice aforethought, they decided they wanted to have this particular YMHA located in the center of the Civic Center. And if there is another world and you can return again, or if there were whirling dervishes are turning over in their graves to think that the YMHA, which was located in the Civic Center and which would never be changed, mm-hmm. has disappeared. To me, it's a great disappointment.
Can you tell us about the personalities of these contributors like Edgar Kaufman?
Well, Edgar Kaufman was the financial angel of the YMHA. He was not only a contributor, but he was active in the place. He was when we lost Mr. Kaufman and they eliminated him as the president, very unfortunately, they lost a lot of money because he did not leave the money to the YMHA, which they should have done.
Oh, was there politics? Was there a reason for his not having been?
There's politics everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into personalities.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with the results. And I think it was a big mistake because that was Edgar Kaufman's baby, and I think he would have left the YMHA enough money to endow her. The other men who were active in the YMHA were, as financial angels, were the Lehman Brothers, who founded Blaw Knox Steel Company, which has since disappeared, I.W. Frank of United Engineering and Foundry Company, a multimillionaire. These were German Jews, most of them. And W.B. Klee was connected with them. And A.M. Oppenheimer, who founded the Paul Steel Company. These were men of stature. And they served on the board, the central board. We had an active board and a central board. And I repeat myself, I think that they would have been very disappointed to see the Belfield location disappear. I believe, and you'll be there, but I wouldn't be around. I believe that 15 years from now, the community's demographic status will change, that we'll be a minority population, the Jewish people, and that the Jewish Community Center will be turned over to another group, just like the Irving Kaufman Center was turned over to another group. You can see with your own eyes that the 14th Ward population is becoming a senior population. The young people are disappearing. You don't see dozens of young people walking along the street. You see senior citizens. Over-the-hill people like me. When you nodded your head, I agree with you.
I went this way, not this way. Oh, dear. Synagogue do you go to then?
Well, originally I was a member of the Rudolf Schoen Temple because my wife liked to take reform services, and there was disagreement between us on that area. Mm-hmm. Then I became a member of Paul Zedek Synagogue, and I recently resigned from that because of my health and my age. I can't go there. I'm a member of the Young People's Synagogue here, and I'm not active in religious affairs. I believe in the principles of the religion. I don't agree with Mr. Marx that religion is a soft soap for people. But I'm not active in religious affairs, and I never have been.
Your daughter did have training, or she couldn't.
She went and graduated from Rudolf Schoen Temple. And after she graduated, she said, "This is not the true religion," and became an Orthodox Jewish. That's all. Mm-hmm. I had no influence in whether her in-laws and her husband were Orthodox were the factors or not. I do not know. But she is a girl of firm mind, and she made her own decision, and she's happy with the decision, and I'm happy with her decision. So since I retired about 15 or 16 years ago, I've been practicing law and trying to slow down and not trying to get irritated by the affairs of the world. I like to read ancient history because I think that everything we do today has been repeated before. The the furnishing of food for the poor, the welfare state, that was originated by in Julius Caesar's time. You know, he furnished wheat for the population, and he was the darling of the he was the Kennedy of the proletariat. And when he became first consul, he became an ultra conservative, and Brutus and Cassius, they were New Deal guys, and that's the reason they killed them, if you read history. Mm-hmm. And the Romans had a fetish for the law. They had a great economy. They built roads which are still in existence, which you know as well as I do. They help to civilize part of the world. And I was reading history, like the book, the change of when Saul became Paul. The a lot of the incidents of paganism became a part of Christianity. But I don't think I should delve into that because I have plenty of trouble taking care of my own knitting. Mm-hmm. But there were great civilizations before. The Persians, you know, under the Median Persians were great civilization. The happiest time of our people was during the Hejar, when they were living in what's the name of the town in Persia, and whatever they were ousted from Palestine and lived under the Persians. Starts with a B. I forget the name of the town. My memory's gone. But under the Persians, they had a large population there, practically the entire population. They were strong in the in government, and they were respected and treated fairly. As strange as it may seem, the Mohammedans treated the Jews more equitably than the Christians did, and history shows that, which is very unfortunate today.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you take classes, or think maybe that it seems to me like you could teach a... Have you ever taught?
No, I taught journalism for a short time at Pitt.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the some of the professors are egomaniacs, you know. They think that what they know is law. But the most important thing in life today is to be considerate. To remember there are two sides to every proposition. And you can't get anywhere politically, and I guess you can't get anywhere in the business world if you try to be equitable and fair. I don't want to paint myself as a paragon. I have my pet hates, and I've done a lot of things of which I will not publicize, but I think on the whole, I've been fair. I recall one time when I was running, one of my friends said to me, what do you know about your opponent? I said, if I say a good thing about him, I'm a fool. And if I say a bad thing about him, I'm a dastard. So I think I'll run on my own record. I said, I'll talk about myself. So I said, nobody ever voted against me. They voted for the other man. So I can't think of anything else that I've seen. I've seen the city of Pittsburgh when it was run by Republicans. We didn't have, in my district, we had approximately, on the south side, we had approximately 600 registered voters. We had two Democrats in the whole district at that time. The Democratic Party in Allegheny County was a non-entity. The Republicans had their good points and their bad points, just like the Democrats. The North and South Park was originated by E.B. Babcock, a Republican. Liberty Bridge and the tunnels and the first airport originated by Republicans. So you're victims of the times, and you get benefit for things, that's all.
Well, how did there get to be a turnaround in which the Democrats became...
Because of the New Deal, the Democrats took over. Mm-hmm. Everybody was broke, and they thought that everybody who was out of a job became a Democrat. All practically 90%, 95% of the Jewish people in Pittsburgh were Republicans before FDR became around. Now 80% of them are probably Democrats, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of any stories that you'd like to tell about the people?
Before we get to stories, I don't know that we have time for the entire story.
Any stories that might be?
We can go on to another tape if you want.
No. No, if we're finished, maybe we should finish and think about.
Well, Babylon was the name of the city I was thinking about, where they are. They were all exiled to Babylon, and if you read history, you'll find out that Babylon is a part of Tehran. The Iranians are not the Mohammedans, you know, they're Arians. And the Jews had a very, very, very successful and happy life in Babylon. The our people, I think that under the scribes, were more intelligent, more considerate than they were under the kings as related in the Bible. King David, he was a bastard of the first character, wasn't he? He saw some broad sleeping on a roof naked, so he sent her husband into the front line so he could get killed. He married her. Is that a great man? Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
I guess he couldn't get elected president today.
Well, he didn't have to get elected president. He controlled all the votes, that's all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you read in the Bible, you see a lot of people, and so-and-so slew, so-and-so, so-and-so, everybody. Of course, that was a product of the time.